My name is Dwayne DeFault, and welcome to Selling SaaS, a podcast that's built to get you the best advice from the top experts for go-to-market strategies, sales, and product-led growth. Now let's get into today's episode.
You wrote a post the other day, maybe longer than that, where you had talked to somebody that they had said that their customer success team only spends 2 hours a week, if that, with their customers. I struggle to read that because I'm like, how do you not have churn through the roof? And I've always believed the same thing. Your existing customers, that's where the best revenue is. That's where like it's easier to keep. It's easier to expand. It's easier to get referrals. Net new sales is great. Don't get me wrong. But there's so much untapped potential, not just for revenue, but the culture of your customer and just your business in general comes from your existing customers. But like, where do you think the industry is headed if they don't focus on more service and support for their existing customers? Because I feel like for a while there, maybe longer than a while, that as soon as you got the customer, it was like, get them on a big contract or don't talk to them unless they absolutely need it, or support was outsourced and stuff. And so I feel like we've kind of, in SaaS, I feel like we kind of created some of the churn and issues that we're sitting in now. And we're kind of scrambling to figure out what to do. And I feel like success, customer success, and that whole role in that realm of business is kind of the ticket that's glaring in people's faces. But like, where do you think that's headed?
I think we're there. Layoffs, overvaluations, course corrections. I mean, I think that what we did is we built a machine that was based on acquisition. And I would say the previous decade has been the decade of SaaS. Like, you could go get $100 million in funding. And listen, in 2021, you could go get $500 million of funding on $5 million of revenue. That was commonly happening. And like, that's one reason why I had to rule out a bunch of companies that I was going to, that wanted me to work there. It's like, where's my upside? You guys are tapped out. You know what I mean? Like, never the multiple I have to get to give me money, you got to give me like 25% of the company, right? So I think we're there. And I think that, you know, now we have a bunch of people that are suffering from the choices of growth that we made in the past, which is an acquisition-heavy thing. Now, here's the deal with acquisition-heavy is we had 2022. It was from the decade of SaaS to the year of recompense. And you know what I'm saying? Like, holy fire rained down and took a few people out, if you know what I'm saying. This is the year, 2023 is the year of separation. It's who's the players and who's not. Like as Draymond Green says, who can play a 16-game season and who's an 82-game player? I'm a 16-game player. I'll play for championships. I'll play for the regular season. And so you got to build a squad differently to make have success in the postseason and then in the regular season when you can stumble your way to being an okay team. And so what we saw with this acquisition-heavy strategy, Dwayne, was that acquisition doesn't create a mechanism and it doesn't automatically translate into your ability to create impact for your customer. It's just tuned to get somebody to believe in you enough to get started and to land, right? After that, the machinations of the post-sale team to get recurring moments of impact that happen over and over again where the customer's like, oh my gosh, Dwayne.com is doing this for me. Now they did this for me. Now they do this for me. And I attribute the value and I wouldn't be able to do this without them. We didn't work on that part of it because the growth was happening at these absurd rates because we're putting all this money in acquisition. Now that that cheap money's gone, now that the headcount required and the resources required to run that engine are going away and been laid off, there's only one engine now that you can tune up because the other one is now run down. It can only run on headcount. It can only run on resources and money. It can only run on higher marketing budgets. So therefore, we now need to tune the engine that has been forgotten, which is how do we invest in our customers so that our customers not only are retained, but they expand and they become advocates that can be used in our acquisition efforts to lower deal cycles, to get referrals so that we have high-performing leads at the top of the funnel and things like that. And that's where we're headed is we're headed to a world where old-school SaaS leaders, unable to change, will continue to die, lay off, and sink their companies because they believe the answer is, I just need to hire more AEs and spend more on lead gen. Because if I have enough leads and enough AEs, I can make the revenue work. Good luck when there's 83 decision makers in every deal and the CFO has no ready to stamp on anything that gets to his desk, right? Ain't gonna work. And now with elongated sales cycles and all of the repercussions that are happening, it just, the economics don't work. The winners will say, we're gonna divest a little bit in that strategy, reinvest in our customers, and create a cheaper, faster, easier, and less risky way to grow that is a friends and family way, not the stranger way.
I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I really started to figure out what was the one, I want to say the one magic bullet for growth. And the thing I always kept hearing was, what is their spend towards growth? What are they spending? Is it 20% of their revenue on acquisition? Is it 30? Is it 40? Like, oh no, you're only at 10%. You need to spend more to grow more. And I always thought something was wrong with that. I'm like, well, you shit in, shit out. Like, even if you throw, if you double your marketing, if you're losing it on the back end, if they're canceling at any point, I don't care if you call it a D-book, if they cancel after 2 months, it's like, well, then we got the wrong people on the front end. And I've always had that mentality that it's like, okay, you got to take care of what you have, water the grass on your side or whatever you want to call it. I used to have a quote, bloom where you're planted. That was the one. I used to love that quote. I've never really agreed with the acquisition at all costs, growth at all costs, because you're just dumping people on, like, the engine reference of it's a V8 blown alcohol, great engine, but it's like, you're only using the front two pistons. It's like, well, you got all this other stuff on the back end that can just make the engine healthy. And if you don't have that stuff figured out, that's why even 6, 7 years ago, when you had a SaaS company that had net negative churn, it was like, everyone always glorified Salesforce, for example. It's like, well, the Salesforce would get compared to, like, oh, it's the same price as these other CRMs. I'm like, but they understand something that all these other SaaS companies never really took time to learn. I was like, they have a more robust customer success, account management, support teams that make it more of an experience. And then you have the land and expand and you learn how to monetize. You can't just monetize everything on the front end because then you push too many people away. It's like, though, I feel like there was this, we just went through this whole decade of, how can you acquire the most for the fastest for the cheapest? And no one was really paying attention to everything you just said, which was like, hey, like, if you didn't take time to nurture this over here, now everyone's leaving. Now everyone's canceling.
And I'd argue that it wasn't the fastest and the cheapest. I think this is the slowest and the most expensive way. The money
you
was.
You could easy. Argue that too.
Yeah. And listen, there's a key distinction in the question that you ask that determines the answer you give. And if you say, how do we land more new business, or how do we land more new customers, versus how do we get our customers to help us land more revenue? That's just a small distinction in the question, and it completely changes the type of answer that you give. And, you know, there's a lot of psychological baggage and tradition and whatnot in landing somebody that believes it now believes in you enough to actually pay you money when they wouldn't pay you before. That's a monumental thing. I'm not saying do away with that, because we have to keep new blood coming in. We have to keep new folks coming into the family. But the issue is that when that's your number one and only growth strategy, and you do that in spite of knowing, well, this customer isn't a really good fit, but we'll just lob it over the fence to post sales and they'll figure it out, because we got to hit these crazy growth goals and we got no other way to do it other than this account. That's when you start to self-sabotage yourself.
It's very interesting. And to kind of continue with that topic for a second, I can't stand when I see marketers that don't listen to phone calls, that don't listen to the customer success team, that don't sit in account review meetings, or at least listen to them. It's like, that's where, like, I don't care what your algorithm says. I don't care what keywords you can come up with by searching and figuring out from SEMrush and all that stuff. It's like, that's great. But if this traffic is converting, but then you're not looking at their cancellation reasons, and you continue this over here, you're literally just digging yourself a bigger hole. You just have a shinier shovel, I guess. Like, there has to be that whole thing. And I always liked HubSpot's flywheel thing that they've always talked about, their flywheel effect. It's like everything feeds itself. And it's like people used to make fun of it kind of in the tech world because they're like, oh, you're not focusing enough on acquisition, whatever, like all this stuff. But then even though they just went through around layoffs, they're like the strongest, one of the strongest SaaS companies around. And they're just operating in the same way that they've always been, using that flywheel method and just getting the feedback and the input and the evangelism from their existing customers.
And doing layoffs because you've made strategic growth bets that don't look like they're going to pay off and you need to cut your losses is very different than overinvesting in a hyper inefficient business model that you're not really trying to make more efficient. And so the way you self-correct is you get rid of some of the people that are in that machine versus figuring out how to make that machine more efficient to handle the heads that are there. You know, and HubSpot's interesting too, you know, an amazing company, they've done amazing things. But most of their philosophy was born in the era where there wasn't good content. Now we have so much content, it doesn't make sense. And I don't know if saying my flywheel starts with creating good content, I think that is, you know, you can't say sales-led growth or product-led growth or customer-led growth should be the one way your company works. You need to have multiple growth vectors, and your executive should be deft enough to be able to monitor and optimize each of those growth vectors. And so that way your company is de-risked if one of them fails. And so I think that's the thing that a lot of companies were missing is they had one growth vector, new business acquisition. That slowed down because the market has slowed down. And now they don't have anything to fall back to. And I am saying, I'm trying to say to people, you actually do have something to fall back to. It's called customers. Let us show you at Catalyst how to use your customers to create that extra growth vector to de-risk your growth strategy going forward, and reinvest some of that money that you spent in acquisition that's just going to be lit on fire if you keep spending it, and put it in somewhere where it's actually going to make a difference on multiple levels.
It's not only one, 100% agree. And I've always believed in not hedging your bets, but being diverse in the way you're going to market. If a company's listening to this and if their acquisition's like 90% paid, you're literally fighting a losing battle. Those systems and those campaigns and platforms are designed to eat your money. And there's a reason why they change it every 6 to 9 months, because all they're trying to do is just make sure they can get as much money from you as possible. So it's a losing game. Now, I get it if you're trying to test things and you're trying to confirm content or a strategy or whatever, but you can't stay there. Like you can easily use it for, you know, like I said, testing grounds. But it's like, if you're a company that's not moving away from that after you've learned what supposedly works, then you're just, again, you're just digging yourself a bigger hole. So using some of that, like if, let's just say a founder is listening to this, they're early stage, they maybe went to market 6 months ago, they got one salesperson, one customer success and support person, they outsource marketing for content or whatnot, small team, like what advice would you give them in the current economic situation and the way the market's reacting and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you the order of operations I worked at here at Catalyst to, you know, secure my first full quarter as the CRO and to have a strong path to our second quarter is, one is I made our pipeline gen amped up and I improved efficiency. I didn't spend one extra dollar. All I did was go in and look at the inefficiencies of the process we were running and I fixed them. And that immediately got our SDR production up 75% with less heads. And so there's always hard work to do to make things work better. And, you know, I'm lucky my dad taught me that lesson. He ran all of manufacturing for M&M Mars for 10 years, maybe. And his job every year was to make a Snickers bar 10% cheaper to make. And if he didn't do that, he got fired. And so he's always instilled in me, like, if you just look at something, there's always something that you can make better. There's always something that you can, you know, fix or optimize. And so that's the first thing, is you got to optimize your pipeline cures all ills. So make sure you stay on that. The second thing I did is now I got more pipeline. I looked at the efficiency of my AEs. I actually got rid of two AEs and I created more revenue this quarter than last quarter with the two extra heads. And the reason I was able to do that is we got the sales process, I believe, in a deal-based stage-based deal management philosophy that allows you to have a consistent verbiage And that allows you to coach because you can coach a consistent process. You can't coach an inconsistent process. And what allows you then to forecast accurately because you got your data right and you're coaching people the right way. And if you can forecast accurately, you know what input you need more specifically than if you don't. So that all works together. And then I started working and challenging my post-sales team to think with a mindset of revenue. My support team right now has already come up with two ways to generate more revenue from our customers because I've tasked them with a growth mentality, not a get rid of tickets mentality. My CSMs found, I don't know, 100% more expansion last quarter than the previous quarter because I tasked them with their job responsibility isn't just to fight retention fires, but to grow our customers. And guess what happened in figuring out how to grow our customers? They had their best retention quarter ever. And so we have, unfortunately, it's like the, I don't know what you call it, like the paradox of the of specialization, which is you have so much specialization that you actually lose the forest for the trees. And you forget like the whole purpose of the company is to grow. That creates value and creates more jobs and all that kind of stuff and allows you to innovate for your customers and drive more value. And so my team needed to be refocused on what the purpose was inside their specialized roles so that we're all rowing in the same direction, not like a bunch of boats out in the lake all going different directions out around our one little thing that we think is important.
Yeah. You lose the forest for the trees is such a good analogy just because it forces you to kind of look up a little bit. What I've experienced there is, for those of you that may not get the reference, is you got your blinders on. You're so deep in whatever you're doing, you can't see outside whatever your role is, whatever the name on the company is, or whatever is in front of you, and you can't see where you're headed. You can't see what's ahead of you. You can't see around you. And so pausing and looking at opportunity and seeing how everything is impacted around each other, it's something that I feel like a lot of companies need to do, startup, or they've been in business for 10 or 15 years. They've really got to start hearing the echo of their customer a little bit more to start with that. I think some of the best growth exercises have come from, in my experience, from the support team. They're the ones hearing all of the problems. They're the reactionary team. It's really unfortunate that those, you know, the people on the front lines don't get more of a voice when it comes to product and growth exercises and go-to-market campaigns because they're the recipients of all the wrong ones.
What's funny is when, let me juxtapose two situations. If an AE bangs the bell and says, and you have a group of AEs that start banging the bell, and they're all saying, yo, we can't close deals because of this. What happens? We spin up a Salesforce report, we do a little bit of measuring, and we're like, we lost $12 billion of deals over the last three quarters because of this. And then immediately the roadmap gets adjusted and there's all that kind of stuff that happens. If a support person says, I'm getting tons and tons of tickets around this, and then a CSM comes in and says, we're churning accounts because of this, what happens? They're told, you need to figure out how to fix the situation. And I'm not saying that's happening in every company, but I am saying that I've been told that by dozens and dozens of post-sale leaders. And so you can't listen to one group. Like, that just shows you where your head's at. And that's like, you know, you're listening to your to strangers more than your own family. Like, listen to your family.
There's so much to that where we could do a whole other episode just on that one topic. Because what I've seen, the things that are coming up in the cancellation reasons and the tickets, the customers, the new customers that could matter a lot more aren't even looking at you because of those problems. The new ones on the front end, they haven't realized it yet. It's always, it's like the review process and testimonial process. Get it from the people that have been in there for 6 months. Don't make that part of your process, like right after implementation and when everyone's happy. Anyways, it's like, it's really interesting because I see that as well, that situation playing out over and over in other companies. But we're on up on time. I want to be respectful of your time. We got a few minutes here. Closing comments or anything that you want the SaaS community or just audience to know, like leaving with those comments, like what's something that they can take with them?
Listen, I'll say one altruistic thing that I hope people do for their own benefit, and then I'll say one selfish thing. How's that sound? So altruistically, this is what I would encourage people to do is when you feel your leader is going back to the well, and by the well, I mean the previous decade strategy, and just saying, if we start doing this again, we're going to, you got to stop them. the world isn't what it was a year ago or 2 years ago. It's a different place. And if you have an emotional reaction to what your leader's running, you owe it to that leader to take them aside and try to help them understand like the situation and put them in contact with people. So don't just let things happen that you know are wrong, especially if you are in a small to mid-sized tech company where the whole point of what we're doing is democratization of how things are happening, right? So that will be the first thing is like, don't be quiet when you know something is wrong. Figure out a way to constructively talk to your leaders about what you see and point them to materials, maybe like this podcast, that will help open their eyes to the current situation and that maybe what they're thinking is wrong. If you have a leader that's open to that, then leave. And the second thing is we talked to some a little bit about discovery, interrogation, and all that. I did a series of posts last year that was, I'll call it a masterclass in discussion and discovery on LinkedIn. It got about 8 million views. I was asked, I don't know how many times to start a course. I partnered with a sales rep of mine at Outreach that it has moved on to create his own company. And he and I worked together and I created all of my discovery training that I give all of my reps into a course that's available on digitalsalescollective.com. And so if you want to level up on discovery, if you want to see a flexible framework that you can use in any discussion to figure out the things a buyer needs to figure out in order to go buy something, then please, you know, go sign up, take advantage of it. And I get testimonials every day, but I just got the first testimonial that said, I bought your course to prepare for a job interview because I had to do a mock discovery. And not only did I get the job, they're asking me to do discovery training for the entire sales team.
That's impressive. That's really great. So everyone listening, go to, what do you say, digitalsalescollective.com?
Digitalsalescollective.com, yeah.
Perfect. I'll link it in the show notes for everybody. Mark, man, it's been great. I feel like we can keep going, but I want to make sure you can get to whatever you're going next. So if anyone wants to connect with you, where do they go?
LinkedIn. I post almost every day.
Awesome. Well, Mark, I appreciate you. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, man. See you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Selling SaaS Podcast. And if you got value from today, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.